The sentence. Savine had become something of a connoisseur of mayhem. She had been caught up in the vicious uprising in Valbec, been a prisoner in the Agrient on the day of the Great Change, borne personal witness to the terror that followed. But the chaos in the Square of Martyrs now was not the purposeful kind that the Breakers, then the Burners, had chosen to impose upon the Union. This reminded her more of the rout after Stauffenbeck, the outright panic of the losing side in a battle, the vicious frenzy of every person for themselves. Quite a crowd must have gathered for her execution, but now, with news of the approaching royalist army, it was their own imminent deaths that were commanding all their attention. Mobs had formed around the archways leading off the square, people screaming and shoving and trampling one another, tangled with riders and hawkers' carts. Here is how things end, not with some grand drama, but a shameful scuffle in a gate. Over the slaughterhouse squealing of mortal terror, Savine thought she could hear the faint sounds of fighting, the same distant clamour of men and metal she had heard at Stauffenbeck, and it sparked that same mixture of hope and fear, though with an even more desperate edge now. Judge glowered back up the rubbish-strewn steps towards the Lord's Round, the Commons Round, the Court of the People, the heart of the Union, whichever version of the Union you subscribe to, rebuilt even more grandly on the grand ruins of the one Baez had laid waste to, its stonework pocked and scarred and daubed with the slogans of the Great Change. "Burn it," she said. The way they set to the task, it must have been a plan long arranged. Burners trotted off with torches, and a few moments later, Savine was shocked to see flames flicker up the sides of the building. Wood stacked in readiness, she supposed, and buttresses painted with pitch. Judge took a long breath and blew it out in a sour grunt, like a woman looking back on the dream home from which she has just been evicted.
"Court stands in recess," she muttered. "Let's go."
"Let's go," said Broad, steering Savine by the shoulder. There was no violence in it, but there was no resisting it either. The burners pressed in close as they set off across the square. She could see nothing between their bodies but running figures, the odd flash of a terrified face. She could not even tell where Orso was. Somewhere else in this jostling, stinking, red-spattered knot of fanatics. She wished he was beside her, this one last time. She stumbled, would have fallen if Broad hadn't caught her arm. Candles sent skittering, set up as a little shrine beside one of the names carved in the flagstones, the names of those killed to keep the old regime in power, half glimpsed under her shuffling feet, blurred through the wet in her eyes. The names of those her father had beaten, tortured, hanged, so that she could be rich. Broad had tied her hands in front of her rather than behind. They had no fear she would make some mad bid for freedom. She had sometimes watched the arrested taken away, mute and tame, and wondered why they did not fight, however long the odds. But now she let herself be herded to her death without even the children. A sudden pang of dread. She cast about wildly, clutching at her dress, straining at the cords around her wrists. Freed had them. She sucked in a shuddering breath. Freed would keep them safe. And if she did not, what could Savine do? Not a thing. She had been fixed on becoming a better person for them, better than her parents had been for her, their best friend, faithful protector, wise teacher, honest confidant. Now they would grow up without ever knowing her, not even remembering her. Ever since she was arrested, she had been telling herself she was doomed, but it was only now that she really started to believe it. There was a crash as something hit one of the burners on the helmet.
"This is madness!" someone was hissing. "Fucking madness!"
his nervous eyes darting, clearly less of a true believer than the rest.
"K Keep moving, came Judge's snarl.
The sounds of fighting were growing louder, closer. Leo might be just beyond the edge of the square, might be cutting his way through to her even now. A surge went through the burners, and she was shouldered sideways, caught her shoe on something, bit her tongue as she nearly fell. The outstretched arm of a limp body, bloody hair spread across the cracked flagstones.
Keep moving,
Broad growled, nudging her on. It had been easy to be brave in the court of the people, to play the part of the noble martyr. Now the Tower of Chains loomed up ahead, Savine's neck tilting further and further back as she stared towards its roof, and the fear began to grip her. The way it had in Valbec, when she crawled through her own whirring machinery, when she ran through the ruined streets. Her mouth grew dry, her knees grew weak, her breath came faster and faster. She was so fixed on the tower's top, she did not see Kernsbeck's lift until they were almost upon it. But then it had few of the flourishes of the inventor's best work. A dizzying column of rickety scaffolding, a wooden platform at the bottom with a rail around the edge and chains at each corner. At the sight of it, she could not seem to stop her chest heaving, and yet she could not seem to get a proper breath. Suddenly, stupidly, she desperately wanted her mother.
It's not too late to talk, she blurted out. It's always been too late.
Judge thoughtfully raised one brow at her.
Do you know why they call me Judge?
Savine stared back dumbly.
Honestly, neither do I.
She jerked her head towards the lift.
Get her on there.
Broad half ushered, half lifted her onto the platform. She felt so weak she thought she might fall as he stepped up himself, his great boot making the whole thing shudder.
You have the king, said Savine. You could make a deal.
A few more burners were finally showing some doubts, but not Judge.
That's your thing, not mine. No one'll be deal-making their way out of this. You lot, hold the line here. Nobody comes through, you understand? Salby! Halder, let's go.
They manhandled Orso onto the lift beside her. He still had that mocking smile at the corner of his mouth, the one everyone thought was contempt for the world, but she knew was really contempt for himself. He was as calm as a man on his way to a card game. He leaned towards her as more burners crowded onto the lift around them.
Have you ever been up before?
What?
She croaked. It was the first time they had spoken in months, since she begged him for Leo's life, since she told him she was his sister. And he talked as if they were polite acquaintances running across one another in the park.
The view is astonishing. The perfect spot to watch the Lord's Round burn. You're going to love it.
She stared at him, mouth slightly open.
Are you joking? I rather think it might be my last opportunity.
She found she'd given a disbelieving laugh. Laughed and sobbed at the same time, perhaps. He nudged her with his shoulder.
It's probably not much comfort, but I'm glad I'm with you.
So am I.
She felt stronger for it, managed to work up the kind of arch glance she might have given him in Swarbrick's office long ago.
My mother always told me it's very important who a girl is seen with.
Oh, said Judge, this is sweet. Think I might cry, Salby.
Think I am crying, said Salby, but maybe it's the smoke.
There was a tickle of it on the air now as the flames licked ever higher up the court of the people, or was it the Lord's Round again just while it burned? Broad did not look as if he would cry. He looked like a wooden man. Moved by Judge's words, like a machine by levers. Another burner stepped stiffly onto the platform beside them, as if he would much rather have stayed, but could not see how to avoid the trip. Savine realized she knew him. One of the men Broad had hired for labor relations. Bannerman, was it? She had seen him smiling at the trial. He was not smiling anymore. Their eyes met, and he swallowed, the knobble in his throat bobbing. The sounds of fighting were louder yet, the people trapped in the square even more desperate. The rest of the burners made a crescent about the base of the tower, weapons pointing outwards. Judge jerked her thumb towards the heavens.
Take us up!
There was a squeal of gears, and the hoist lurched, then began to rattle upwards.
At least we don't have to climb the damn steps,
said Orso, tipping his head back to follow the chains straight up the well of scaffolding to the square of sky at its top.
Thanks to Master Kernsbeck's excellent lift.
There's progress, whispered Savine.
Save the king!
Squealed Gorst, ploughing through the panicking crowds. The badly carved virtues of the Great Change squinted down on havoc, people running, wailing, cringing, blundering into each other. Hard to say what side anyone was on, if there was such a thing as sides anymore. Most were just trying to live through it.
Save the king!
Gorst hacked someone down with his long steel, sent them bouncing from a pedestal, smearing blood across the stained marble. He kicked, shoved, screeched his way through the mob, and Vic limped after him, her face one enormous throb, a watchful eye on his steels, in case he took her head off with a backswing, wondering what her chances were of finding someone out here who could set a broken nose. They burst onto the Square of Martyrs, and she hobbled to a stop, nearly slipping over backwards, her free hand up to shield her battered face. The court of the people was on fire, a giant torch, angry flames roaring. One of its great windows shattered, sparks showering, throwing garish light across the chaos. Something hit Vic on the back of the head and she stumbled, didn't even know what it was, where it had come from. Touched fingers to her hair and they came away bloody. But then she was covered in blood already. Her nose was blocked with it, her chin crusted with it, her mouth salty with it.
Save the king!
Gorst pounded on, people scattering in front of him. Horsemen spilled from the slogan-daubed buildings on the right, clattering across the square, chopping people down indiscriminate. A horse fell right in front of Vic, rolled, crushed its rider. She nearly fell herself as she staggered around it, barged into a woman clutching an armful of candlesticks.
Save the king!
Shrieked Gorst, pounding on towards the Tower of Chains. Through the tears the smoke had stung from her eyes, Vic thought she could see Kernsbeck's lift crawling up the scaffold on its side. There were burners there, a curved line of them, weapons ready, sharpened steel gleaming with the colours of fire. A last line of defence around their place of execution. Horsemen crashed into them, Anglanders maybe in dark uniforms, spears darted, swords rose and fell. The noise was appalling. Tortured metal, tortured beasts, tortured men. Something crunched into Vic's side and sent her rolling over and over into a fallen wagon with one wheel squeaking around in the air. She squirmed onto her back, clutching at her jacket. Just dirt. She wasn't hurt. No worse than she'd been before, anyway. Mace still flapping around her wrist on its thong, and she caught it by the handle and scrambled up. The burner's line was coming apart. She shrank back as horsemen thundered past. She saw one catch a spear in the throat, tumble from the saddle. She saw a man drop with his helmet dented right in. She saw Gorst, face locked in a snarl, savagely swinging. A burner stared straight at Vic. She stepped up, caught him by the paint-smeared breastplate. Before she could even lift her mace, Gorst's long steel whipped past and took his head off, left Vic staring in shock at the squirting stump. Her hand was tangled with his armour, and she was dragged down on top of him, fresh blood in her eyes, in her face. She twisted free, spitting and coughing. A bearded man sat, very surprised, a shattered spear shaft sticking from his groin. A woman knelt, blubbing, great strings of snot hanging from her nose. A rider with a soot-streaked face stared down at his stricken mount, lying on its side, hooves scraping weakly at the bloody flagstones.
"Where is she?" someone roared.
Where is she? Help! Some help here! For the king! My shoulder! Please, my shoulder!
Vic stood staring, breathing hard through her sore mouth, still gripping the mace so tight her hand ached. Gorst held his bloody steels in clenched fists, staring up towards that great scaffold, the platform inching its way upwards.
Not again, he growled. Not again!
The burners were finished, most of them dead or wounded, the rest throwing down their weapons. For better or worse, it looked as if the great change was done. Or maybe there was a new great change, but what it was a change into, no one could yet say. Brock sat above the whole mess on his high horse, amid a cluster of dark-uniformed Anglanders, pointing towards the Tower of Chains with his sword.
How does that bloody lift work? We have to get it down!
Vic stared up towards the roof. The platform had stopped moving. They were already at the top. She licked her split lip and spat yet again, then untangled the thong from her wrist with clumsy fingers and tossed the mace on the ground. After a moment's thought, she sat down wearily beside it. Blood had trickled into one of the martyrs' names and picked half the letters out in red.
We're too late, she mumbled.
Broad stepped onto the roof of the Tower of Chains. It had turned out a fine day, crisp and sunny, with a cool breeze carrying off the vapours so you could see across the city. That same mad view he'd witnessed 100 times, but every time it somehow took him by surprise. He caught Bannerman's eye. The man had lost all his swagger. He looked scared and confused at once, like he couldn't see how they'd ended up here. Broad knew how. Some men can't help themselves. He wasn't drunk, hadn't touched a drop all day. But he felt drunk, head spinning. He wondered how many people he'd thrown down now, how many he'd seen thrown down. Never someone he knew well, though. Never someone who'd saved his life, his family's lives. He felt the letter crushed to a sweaty ball in his fist.
We hear you are in trouble.
Didn't think he could hear fighting anymore, just the sounds of the wounded now, thin on the wind. Had the young lion won? Was the great change done? The thought brought up no real feeling. He was playing dead, maybe. He'd done that in Styria. Told himself he was dead, so nothing that was done to him could matter. Nothing that he did could matter. Peaceful up here, so high above the city, as high as the highest smoking chimneys. He watched Bannerman nudge Savine up the 3 steps to the platform. He watched Orso shake off Halder's hand and take the 3 steps himself to stand beside her, facing the city, facing the sea.
We hear you have lost yourself.
Don't worry, said Judge, her wild red hair whipped and slashed by the wind, and behind her flames flickered, smoke rolling into the sky from the burning court of the people. She put a hand on Broad's cheek.
I know this isn't easy. Salby?
No, said Broad.
He tossed the letter over the parapet, watched it drop out of sight.
It should be me.
We know who you are.
He stepped forward, shouldered past Salby and Bannerman and Halder, comrades from the battlefields of Styria, the barricades in Valbek, the midnight beatings of striking workers. Everything took an effort, like he was wading through a bog.
Our husband.
More of the city showed as he stepped up onto the platform. The grimy white towers, the dark mill chimneys, the maze of roofs leading all the way to the sparkling sea. Everything smelled of burning, so strong it was hard to breathe.
Our father.
Savine stared towards the long drop, muscles working on the side of her face, slightly bent over like she wanted to huddle to the roof. Orso stood with hands tied behind him,
and the fixed smile of a man attending an event he found insufferably dull.
A good man.
Ready, Your Majesty?
Broad stepped up close, cutting the cord between his wrists with a sharp jerk of his knife, then pressing it into his palm. Orso looked over his shoulder, brows shooting up.
I'm willing to give it a go. You just have to remember.
Broad nudged his lenses up his nose with a fingertip, took a deep breath, stepped down from the platform, and pushed Bannerman off the tower. He wasn't expecting it, wasn't braced for it. A firm shove with one hand was all it took. His head snapped sideways, he dropped his sword, and he tripped one foot with the other. He gave a surprised grunt as he tumbled over, like a man who'd sat down only to have his chair whisked away by some joker.
What?
Said one of the other burners. Broad punched him in the face so hard his helmet flew off. He reeled back, hit the parapet, caught it with one wild hand. Broad bent, grabbed his ankle, and yanked it up. He screamed as he went over, flailing at the air.
No!
Shrieked Judge, half fury, half wounded disbelief. Orso had stabbed Halder, knife buried under his jaw, blood squirting over the king's clenched fist and soaking his dirty lace cuff. Savine stood beside him, framed by the blue sky, eyes huge in her pale face, a dotting of blood on her white dress. One of the other burners was coming at Broad with a mace. Levant was his name, a Styrian. Strange that he'd be a burner, but then who'd have thought Broad would ever be one either? He swung as Broad ducked, and the mace caught him a glancing blow, bounced from the top of his head. Broad came up, caught Levant by the breastplate, lifted him off his feet, and rammed him into the roof head first. He felt a jolt, a pricking in his back. Hardly any pain. Surprising to see a dagger sticking out of his shoulder, Salisbury's fist around the grip. Broad gave a great roar, twisting around. Salby punched him. It bounced off his cheek, but his knuckle caught Broad's lenses and knocked them skewed, hanging from one ear. Suddenly the world was all fog, a sparkly blur. Broad tried to catch Salby's throat, but he was slippery as a fish. He lashed blindly with both fists, but Salby dodged. Broad tripped over something. Levant, groaning as he rolled onto his back, face a red smear. Broad shook his head, squinted, managed to catch his lenses and pull them back on. One was cracked, a crack in the world. He saw Halder sat against the parapet, hand clutched to his throat, blood squirting between his fingers, black as tar. Then he saw Salby, with Bannerman's sword in his hand and his teeth bared. He swung, and Broad dodged back. The blade clanged into the parapet and sent up a puff of stone dust. Salby lifted it to swing again, but Broad stepped into him, caught the hilt with one hand before it came down, blade waving at the sky between them. Broad punched at him, but Salby got his free arm up, fending him off. Broad rammed him back against the parapet and drove his breath out in a wheeze. Salby dropped the sword, and it fell twinkling, tumbling, spinning towards the blood-stained moat far below. Tiny figures down there looking up. Broad could hear Orso swearing at the top of his voice. He punched again, spitting, snarling, grunting, the strange and beautiful view spread out beyond, snapped Salby's head back so it smacked into the parapet, left blood on the stone. How many times had they fought side by side? He'd been a good man, Salby. Better than Broad. Maybe he still was. Broad did his best to smash his face in, even so. It all happened so fast. Savine turned from the long drop to see that two burners had gone off the tower. A third sat staring with his throat slit. A fourth lay groaning, face covered in blood. Broad had Salby half pinned over the parapet, one arm going up and down like a piston as he punched him. Orso spat curses while he struggled with the last. They staggered to one side, wrestling over an axe, leaving Savine and Judge to stare at each other across the flat roof of the Tower of Chains. Cold calculation had been the root of Savine's many victories. but there are times only blind fury will do. She threw herself screaming from the platform. If her hands had been free, she'd have flailed away with both fists. Since they were tied, she clenched them together to make one. She didn't think of her children, or the union, or herself. She didn't think of anything but smashing Judge's head with her hands.
"Die, you mad cunt!"
she snarled, and clubbed Judge right across the face, sending her stumbling towards the lift. Savine caught her around the rashy throat, rammed her back into the railing, and started choking her, making the platform jerk and wobble, chains thrashing, the whole scaffold trembling. Judge bared bloody teeth, almost a smile, shot out a hand. Nails sank into Savine's neck, ripping at her. She gave a shriek, cut off in a gulp, as Judge kneed her in the gut, shoved her staggering off the lift and back across the tower's roof. Someone careered into her and knocked her flying. Orso, still reeling around in his ungainly dance with one of the burners. Savine's head hit stone, ears ringing. Her hands were in a pool of blood. She wasn't sure whose.
"You fucking die!" growled Judge.
A foot thudded into Savine's ribs and rolled her over, the back of her skull cracking on the steps up to the platform. Judge came at her, swinging her bare foot back for another kick. This time Savine caught it, hugged it to her chest, twisting up, dragging Judge hopping off balance, then flinging her back, rusty breastplate scraping as she sprawled across the roof. The man with the bloody face had caught Broad from behind. Salby lifted an axe, ready to chop into the back of Broad's skull. Savine grabbed it below the head and ripped it from his fist. She spun about, axe held clumsily in her tied hands, just as Judge rammed her into the parapet with a shoulder, driving her breath out in an agonized rasp. They wrestled, tangled, clawed, elbowed. Savine got the axe in the way, snarling as she pressed it into the side of Judge's face, but there wasn't enough force behind it to stop her, only to slowly peel a flap of flesh from her cheek. Judge punched Savine in the stomach, and again, punched the breath out of her, punched the strength out of her. Puke scalded the back of her throat. The axe wrenched from her tied hands, tumbled past her shoulder, and was gone off the tower. Savine struggled, twisted, snapped with her teeth, but Judge had her, bending her back over the parapet. Blood ran from the ragged wound on her cheek in crooked streaks, dripped from her chin, pit-pattered in Savine's face.
"You're tougher than you look," she said, showing a red smile,
and she caught Savine around the throat, pushing, pushing.
"But you're still taking the long drop."
It was true. Savine was slipping. Her toes were off the roof, the parapet grinding into the small of her back. She could feel herself teetering, her balance almost shifted over the void. She heaved in one last breath and kneed Judge between the legs, loosened her grip just enough to catch her around the back of the neck with both hands, so the cord between her wrists cut into Judge's rash-splattered throat.
"So are you!"
And she went over backwards. Time slowed to a crawl, a blur of clouds and sky, her eyes full of Judge's red hair. She hoped her children would have good lives. A glimpse of the burning Lord's Round, wrong way up, flames stabbing downwards. The world spun crazily, tiny buildings far below. She was falling. Then she gasped as something jerked at her ankle, a stab of pain through her knee, through her hip. She saw Judge drop. Just a glimpse of her bloody snarl before she was gone in a mass of clawing limbs and flapping cloth. Then Savine crashed into something hard, but not the ground, cut stones, the side of the tower. She heard Broad growling with effort. Everything white, her dress fallen over her head. She was upside down and he had her by one foot.
"Pull her up!"
Orso's desperate voice. She saw Broad's straining face spotted with blood, Orso behind him, arms around his waist, dragging him back. She should have told them to let her fall, but all she could do was scream with every snatched breath, She should at least have stayed still and let them pull her up. Instead, she tore at her dress, clawed at the soot-streaked stone with her fingernails, whimpering and coughing and choking on her own spit. The wall scraped at her, scratched at her, cloth ripped, the parapet dug into her stomach. They collapsed together onto the rooftop. Among the bodies of the burners, blood everywhere. Blood on the weapons and dashed against the parapets, blood soaked into Broad's jacket and streaking his hands, blood trickling from Savine's scalp, tickling at her eyelid, spattered on her white nursing dress, still turned half inside out. She could not move. Her face throbbed. Her leg ached. One of her fists had a great hank of Judge's orange hair wedged between the fingers. She could not seem to make them come open. Her breath came in whooping sobs. It was snowing. Black snow. Ash from the burning Lord's Round settling on the rooftop. Orso held her tight.
"I've got you," he whispered over the wild thudding of her heart. "I've got you."
The lift dropped to the ground with a shudder, and Orso felt a surge of relief so strong he wanted to cry. He actually might have. A sentimental streak or two. There were lots of soldiers at the bottom, lots of Anglanders in dark uniforms. There were burners, too, but on their knees, or having their wrists bound, or lying still, daubed with red, and not just paint. Figures of terror no more.
"Some help here!" he called out.
Broad was propped against the rail, breathing hard through gritted teeth, his sleeve soaked with blood, and the knife still stuck deep in his shoulder. Orso had not dared to try to pull it out. Two men in those wonderfully familiar red uniforms of the King's Own rushed to help him.
"He saved our lives," said Orso. "Both our lives."
"We'll see he's well taken care of, Your Majesty."
"Your Majesty." It was said earnestly, without sneering sarcasm, without being made into a joke or an insult. It had been a very long time since Orso last heard it said that way. He helped Savine down from the platform, his arm around her. He could not let go of her, as if there was some irresistible force pulling them together. There were faces here he knew, faces he wanted to cry even more at the sight of. Old friends and loyal comrades, Lord Marshal Forrest, battle-worn and reliable, Corporal Tunney, looking as if he'd won big at the gaming table, Hildy, who had stolen a new soldier's cap from somewhere, her face smeared with soot, Victorine Danteuffel, even though her nose was bloated and bloody and surrounded by a spectacular blooming of bruises, even Bremer Dan Gorst, with steels still in his hands and a most unfamiliar grin. Finally, there was one face Orso had to confess he was less than delighted to see, Leo Dan Brock, smiling somewhat queasily at Savine.
"Thank the fates you're safe," he said
as she disentangled herself from Orso, bruised and bleeding, but very much unbowed. They did not kiss or fall into each other's arms, but then Savine had never been one for displays of affection.
"Where are the children?"
she asked.
"They're safe," said Brock. "They're guarded. Everything's taken care of."
Teufel's weary eyes rolled towards the giant torch that had once been the Lord's Round, smoke pouring up from it more thickly than from all the city's chimneys combined.
"You sure?"
"We've got men trying to contain the blaze," said Forrest. "Say what you like about the burners. They knew how to set a fire."
The consequences of recent events were only now starting to dawn on Orso.
"So, am I king again?"
Hildy watched the last burners being dragged away.
"Looks like it," she said. "Whoever would have thought?"
When Orso denounced himself, he had meant every word of it. Against all the odds, thanks to the loyalty of old friends and the self-interest of more than one old enemy, it looked as if he had been given another chance. he gazed across the corpse-strewn square of marshals. More and more people were gathering, staring, blinking in surprise, as if they were emerging into the sunlight after a long time in the dark. Veterans of his Crown Prince's division in worn-out uniforms, men of Angland in sombre black, ex-lords of the Open Council armed with flatbows.
"Things will be different this time, Hildy," he said. "I promise. You've never been much at keeping those. But things will be different this time."
He did not say it only to her. He promised it to himself. He shouted it to everyone in that triumphant gathering at the foot of the Tower of Chains.
"We have a chance now for a fresh start, for a new union."
One of Forrest's men was holding an old battle flag and also felt a surge of pride as the breeze took it and the blazing sun gleamed in the Agrient once again.
"A chance to do things right."
He looked across those eager faces. Some of them were even starting to smile.
"No more riots," he called. "No more trials, no more executions. No vengeance and no settling of scores. No court of the people."
He caught Savine's eye, her chin up, her eyes shining. If she believed in him, he knew it could be done.
"But there can be no more closed council either. No corruption and injustice. No dead grip of Valent and Bulk around the throat of the nation. This time, I mean to govern for the many, not the few. To be a king for everyone."
"You really think you can do all that?" asked Vic,
and it seemed, behind her customary mask of scorn, she couldn't entirely hide a glimpse of hope. At that moment, Orso felt as if he could do anything.
"I can try. We can try, together. I owe you all my thanks. You especially, Vic."
He seized her scabbed hand and pressed it to his lips.
"You gambled everything. You didn't have to."
"Seems I've a sentimental streak of loyalty," she grunted, licking her bloody top lip and awkwardly working her hand free.
"I am heartily glad of it."
He clapped Corporal Tunney on the shoulder, dragged Forrest into a crushing hug.
"Where would I have been without you?"
"Just doing my duty,"
growled Forrest, his cheeks colouring above his overgrown beard. Orso turned to the young lion, pale, gaunt and ungainly on his false leg, blonde hair darkened with sweat and that sickly smile still on his face. For various reasons, several of them good ones, Orso had grown to dislike the ex-Lord Governor of Angland quite intensely. But his father once said you can measure a man by how he treats those he dislikes. He had said he would be a king for everyone, and he meant it. The lowest as well as the highest, his enemies as well as his friends. And Brock had come through for him today. There was no denying that.
"I owe you too, Lord Brock," said Orso,
since it seemed they were all going back to their old titles.
"We have had our differences. We could hardly have had bigger ones. But if men like us can march into the future together, there is hope for anyone."
He offered his hand.
"There is hope for everyone."
Brock winced down at Orso's open palm, taking a deep breath, as if composing himself for some distasteful task.
"Not everyone," he said,
and then produced a dagger from behind his back and stabbed Forrest in the chest. At the same moment, Orso felt himself gripped from behind, a blade pressed into his throat. Brock's man, Durant.
"Still,"
he hissed in Orso's ear. "Everybody, still." Suddenly, there were raised flatbows everywhere, the points of the loaded bolts gleaming. Lord Isher had one, and several of his friends who had once sat on the Open Council, and some of the Anglanders too. Forrest took a wobbling step and dropped to his knees, blood spreading through his jacket in a dark circle.
"What are you
doing?
Savine nearly shrieked, staring at the drawn swords and levelled spears.
I am putting an end to the great change, said her husband, and taking back the Agriant in the name of the king.
Anglanders were already disarming the stunned members of the king's own, forcing them onto their knees along with the burners.
You fucking bastard, breathed Vic, but with an air of wounded resignation.
Orso could only watch with a familiar sinking feeling. He should have known, the moment things started looking up, that something like this would happen.
Actually, my wife's the bastard, said Brock, which makes my son Harrod the oldest child of King Giselle's oldest child. A strong claim to the throne.
That's not how succession works, snarled Tunny as he was shoved onto his knees.
Are you sure? Asked Brock. I have 70 flatbows with a different opinion.
Gorst still had his steels in his hands, bloody metal glinting, eyes narrowed. Now he shifted his weight a fraction.
No!
Shouted Orso, Durin's knife pressing hard into his neck. Best swordsman in the world or not, he would be dead before he could reach Brock, and the rest of them soon after.
Lay down your weapons! That's a royal decree!
His first in some time, and by the look of things, his last. Gorst breathed in hard, then gave a bull's snort and tossed his steels clattering down. Two Anglanders stepped forward to bind his wrists. They were already doing the same to Teufel, to Hildi, to anyone who might still have been loyal.
What have you done?
Whispered Savine, back of one hand to her mouth.
Let them go, Leo. Please let them go.
You have been through quite the ordeal, droned Brock.
Someone take my wife to our children. They need their mother.
The blood was spreading out around Forrest's body.
He was a good man, whispered Orso numbly. A loyal man.
Too loyal. Brock snapped his fingers. Secure the gates of the Agriant.
Already done, said Isher smartly.
A coward on the battlefield, but as proficient a traitor as ever.
There'll be a price for this, said Orso, as his wrists were tied for the third time that day.
He felt the need to register some resistance, however pointless. Brock regarded him without the slightest trace of guilt or shame.
I've already paid. See all members of the King's Own taken prisoner until we can make sure of each man's obedience.
Conduct Citizen Orso and his servants to locked quarters in the House of Questions. Glarwood should already have every gate and bridge in the city under guard. I want proclamations printed and pasted at every corner. The great change is over.
Isha grinned as he lowered his flatbow. Long live King Harrod II, he said.